That's why I just love the beauty of this story, because it highlights how good God is and how powerful the atonement is in our lives.
Oh, this is such a fun episode. You're going to enjoy it. We have Ben Lomu on, who played King Lamoni in the Book of Mormon movies, to talk about King Lamoni and some of the things he learned and how the scriptures became real through that. But as he does so, he takes us to some places I didn't expect to go, and especially some emphasis on the power of the Book of Mormon and the goodness and power of Christ, and some really touching stories that were very edifying for me. Hello, and welcome to the Scriptures Are Real podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about elements of the Scriptures that help them become more real to us, because we believe that allows us to apply them in our lives and draw more power out of them, and we need all the help we can get. I'm your host, Kerry Muehlstein, and I have with us a guest I'm really excited to have on. This is Ben Lomu. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks, Kerry. I am so happy to be here.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. And I forgot to tell you, Ben, but before we get going, I actually just wanted to let my audience know about something that we just finished doing a church history tour, and we had so many people that wanted to go. And I just said, I don't have time to do more. But my wife told me, well, you know, next year we're studying church history. We've just acquired all these things. You need to figure out a time. So we are going to do another one in the fall. I think it's October. We're going to do it October 10th through 19th or something. So if any of my audience is interested in that, please email me at thescripturesarereal@gmail.com. That's thescripturesarereal@gmail.com. We just want to be able to help people get ready for Come Follow Me church history year. So anyway, I forgot to tell you we'd need to talk about that. But now let's talk about you, Ben. So I met Ben, and many of you may know Ben this way. I met Ben because he's the host of Come Follow Up. And they've made the mistake a few times of having me on there. And I just have so much fun with Ben on there. He is a fantastic teacher. I'm impressed with his ability to remember people, their names. He has a fantastic way of just understanding what people are saying and turning it into gospel principles, and a gifted teacher. And I know that also from hearing from his students. He teaches at the Utah Valley Institute, there next to UVU, Utah Valley University. So not only is he a gifted teacher, but he is just a good guy. Like, I enjoy being with him. He makes me laugh, and he makes me feel good. And everyone that works with him has that experience. He's also an actor. He's been in a number of things, including in the Book of Mormon movie starring Lamoni, which is part of why we were excited to have him on today. So welcome, Ben. And what else should we know about you?
Well, thanks, Kerry. That was a very, very kind introduction. Kerry,
your wife paid me.
Very nice. So we actually have connections even beyond the show.
That's true. Yeah.
Where your family grew up with my in-laws, and then our friendship with the Ogdens, with Trent, Tammy and Trent. And so, yeah, so it's always great to see you and work with you. So I'm glad you mentioned that I teach at Utah Valley Institute. That's my main career. Everything else that I do is just great. But at my heart, in my soul, I am a religious educator. I do enjoy other hobbies. I've been married for 23 years. I've got 4 kids. Nothing brings me more joy than my wife and kids. But I also enjoy, mountain biking, martial arts. I love to exercise and stay physically fit. And so I just enjoy life. I enjoy being outdoors, and I'm very busy, but it's all with good things. And I'm really finding joy in the journey.
Well, good. Now I will confess, and this may happen sometime, but you guys, it's almost an embarrassment to say on the show, but Ben is a U of U football fan, and I've been tempted many times to sneak down to his office and redecorate it in BYU Cougar stuff. So not that I like the U football, actually. I do, but I like to give Ben a hard time. And one day I'm going to redecorate his office. Anyway.
Hey, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, there is so much in this lesson. I mean, Alma 17 through 22, we could spend weeks and weeks on. Stories that everybody knows, and yet every time I come back to them, I'm like, oh wow, there's something I didn't think of in there. So we're not going to try and cover everything, we will just dive in wherever Ben would like to dive in. So where would you like to take us, Ben?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do love these chapters, and so much of that love started with being cast as King Lamoni. I really had to dive in and get to know what's going on here, specifically with King Lamoni, because we don't have a lot of information about him. We just kind of pick up the story. And so what's really intrigued me is in chapter 17, I'm so impressed by what did King Lamoni see in Ammon that caused him to listen, to soften his heart, you know? And so trying to get inside of his head. And it was actually kind of fun because as an actor, I had a chance to create my own backstory for King Lamoni. You know, what was he like? How was he raised? How familiar was he with the Nephites? Did he have, you know, there's one verse that I've always, and maybe you can shed some light on this, Kerry. So for example, verse 6, you know, this is where Ammon, he comes in and he meets Lamoni. If you look in...
So we're in what, chapter 18?
Chapter 17. So towards the end of 17. Verse 6. Let's see. Sorry. Well, 26.
26, but okay.
Before we get there, so if you go back up to like 22, the king wants to know about Ammon. Like, yeah. What are your desires? What do you want? And I was always curious, does King Lamoni at this point know that Ammon is the son of a king?
Yeah.
You know, is he trying to set up some sort of like, you know how they did like in Europe, you know, with kings, and they, you know, they would kind of make these alliances with families.
Right.
So part of my process was, okay, and this is of course just trying to piece things together. Did Lamoni see something in Ammon? Was it the fact that he was the son of a king? Was that the initial start of this relationship? Okay, take one of my daughters. Let's unite our families, and maybe we can benefit from each other. Maybe I can benefit from having this, you know, this new son-in-law who is a son of a Nephite king. And, you know, of course, you know, Ammon, he just says, let me be your servant. And then this is a question I have, Kerry, that maybe you can help me understand. In verse 26 of Alma 17, Ammon wants to go and serve the king. And after he had been in the service of the king 3 days, as he was with the Lamanitish. In my mind, I think that's the only time we ever see Lamanitish mentioned in the Book of Mormon. And so this is my thought. You tell me what you think. So the thought that I had was, could these be remnants of the people of Amulon? Could these be part Nephite, part Lamanite? You know, maybe these are considered lesser than in Lamanite society, and that's why they're the servants. And so that was one thought I had, that this is kind of another reason why Lamoni could be familiar with Ammon. What does he see in him? The beginnings, you know, what's intriguing him by, you know, sending him to be with the other, you know, maybe Nephite servants. I don't know. It was a fun thought to get into, to kind of begin that process of thinking, why was Lamoni so intrigued with Ammon?
I love that question. Well, all the questions you've just asked. And I have to say, you know, part of what for me makes the scriptures real is to try and get in the heads and hearts of the people. And that it really is part of the reason for doing a podcast like this. I think when we can do that, when they become real people, we know we're real people. And so we can see different ways of relating their lives to our lives and applying the scriptures to our lives. So I think that's important. And I can't imagine what would make someone have to do that more than playing the person in a movie or writing that script or, you know, writing a book or something like that. I have a friend, she's actually a former student of mine, Corey Hawks, has written a book that I think is available on Amazon as an ebook. It's called Abby, where it's about Alma the Younger's wife, someone who's never mentioned at all. And she just felt like, you know, a lot of times we're writing books about these people who have like one mention, but we don't know much about them. But what about someone who must have played a huge role in a lot of things going on? and we never even hear about her at all, right? And so that's someone who's really getting it, trying to get in the head of someone that we don't even know about. But anyone who's writing has to get in their head. But I think you had to really, really try and get in Lamoni's head, which is going to cause you to ask questions like this, right? Why? Because you have to figure out, what am I doing with my face and my hands when I see him come in? Am I recognizing he's something? Am I suspicious of him, right? All those kinds of things. That's the questions I imagine you're asking yourself. And I love, so I'd love to actually hear a little bit more about that from you. But let me go to the, I think it's an astute thing to notice, this Lamanitish word, because you're right. We don't get that anywhere else. And that, I don't know that Mormon or anyone else, whoever's record he's drawing from here, if that's who first used this word, I don't know that they're just accidentally, whoops, one time I put an ish on the end. It does seem like it's not just Lamanite. They clearly call people Lamanites.
Yeah.
So this is something different than just a straight up Lamanite. And I think you're asking the right questions. There's a part of me. So I'm one who suspects it's quite likely that there are more people in the land they're in than just Nephites, Lamanites, and Mulekites. So maybe it's someone from a group that was there even before them that they've conquered, or they took them in a raid and their servants or something, you know, that kind of thing happens. Or like you said, maybe it's dissenter Nephites that are part of the society, but they only get to be part of the society in these lower levels or something. But it is something. I don't think it's a coincidence that it's Lamanitish and it's servants, as you said, right? There's something about them that makes it so that they're the servants. They're not quite what everyone else is. And the fact that that's where Ammon goes, it does seem suspicious, like, hey, yeah, you go with all the other outcasts, although that's a really odd thing right after having offered his daughter to him, right?
So
it's almost like he said, okay, you don't want to be on this level, we'll put you on the other level. You let's see how you like that game, right? I don't know. It's hard to figure out exactly. There are a lot of intrigues in this story that I don't know, but I'm like you, that I think I can't imagine him just suddenly offering his daughter, even though he's certainly amazed by what Ammon has done. I can't imagine him just suddenly offering, no, let's see, or even offers his daughter before he's done anything, right? Sorry. I got
right at the very beginning.
Down. Yeah, that's like one of the first things he does.
Yeah.
He offers his daughter. I just can't imagine that happening to just any Nephite that wanders in, right? There's no way. No way. So it does seem like he may have identified himself or have been recognized as, maybe by someone who's Lamanitish and used to be Nephite. He's been recognized as, oh, do you know who this guy is? Because that's not small potatoes to have the son of the king there, right? That is a big thing. And you're right. I mean, political alliances are, they're from the beginning of civilized culture. We have evidence of political alliance marriages. So it could be political alliance. It could also be this notion, and this is, we know, European, but my guess is, I mean, we see some evidence of it even in ancient Egypt and Hittite society and so on, the notion that, okay, we're going to make sure, even if it's an enemy, we treat people of a certain status a different way. And there's a part of the reason behind that is, well, what if I end up on the other side of that? What if I get captured by the enemy? It's handy for me if they know that they should treat me that way, right? So maybe something along those lines. But it's really hard for me to think that he doesn't know at least something of who Ammon is.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think when you kind of just do some digging and look at some things that are mentioned, you know, previously on how those cultures functions, sometimes it just kind of makes sense that, and that's what I love about the scriptures is it doesn't always spell everything out for you. It allows you to explore and to think and to want to do more research and find out what is really happening. And there are times when you get the answers and other times you just have wonderful, fun conversations about it.
Yep. And you know, I certainly wouldn't base my testimony off of this, but to me, it's another little evidence of the authenticity of this. If you're making this stuff up, you explain a lot more than if you're writing a record where you just kind of assume everyone understands your culture, Right. This speaks like an authentic ancient record that just assumes people know the culture. It does not speak like someone who's like, hey, I'm going to tell an ancient story, but I got to make sure people understand it. This is just one of a thousand examples in there. You know, they assume we know what Lamanitish is. They assume we'd know why what's going on with Ammon and his being asked to marry this daughter. Right. And we don't get it. We're not in that culture.
That's right.
But you had to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that was really interesting when we were filming, the director really wanted to make sure that King Lamoni's wife was a huge part of the story and to really show her influence. And so as actors, we would just talk, okay, how should we play this? You know, we would together look at it. And when we were, you know, specific with the part of the daughter, as we were discussing, where we thought, what if we were using this as a setup? You know, let's check his motives. Let's just see how is he going to respond if we're like, okay, take one of my daughters. And that kind of was the turning point of Lamoni's first impressions of Ammon for us, was like, okay, something's different.
Yeah.
What is, you know, he wants to be my servant. Okay. And so you can kind of see that the softening of the heart. So it was interesting as we're filming these scenes, I had to always know where we were at, because so you kind of jump around, film things. So I always had to know, okay, where are we in this point? Where is Lamoni's heart as he's starting to slowly warm up? You know, naturally I'm drawn to, you know, missionary work. I think back to when I was a missionary, and I hope we can get to the part where I'd love to contrast Ammon's approach to Aaron's approach, Ammon's approach to King Lamoni, and Aaron's approach to Lamoni's father.
Yeah.
And, you know, how it's just, they go on guns a blazing. We're going to just preach. And things start out really slow for them, you know, as they preach in Molokai. And is Molokai, is that the city they start in? And then you can see how, and I don't know if Ammon is just a little more wise, you know, with his brothers, where he takes this approach of, you know, he's a little more patient, and maybe that comes with age. I think back to young missionaries versus older missionaries. As a young missionary, you just want to get out there and you want to baptize everybody. I still remember I went to Rome on my mission, and everyone always said, you're going to go baptize the Pope, you know? And I'm like, hey, the Pope's doing his thing, you know? I got other people to worry about. But it was just like, you have this zeal of just, let's just go. And we have the Book of Mormon, we have this amazing weapon in our disposal, and let's just show everybody what it can do. It doesn't always work out that way. You know, you really have to get to their heart before you can be taught. And that's why I love Ammon's example. This is how I approach missionary work. You know, I love, you know, Elder Uchtdorf shared this in one of his talks. And I know that Francis of Assisi always gets quoted saying this. I don't know how legitimate it is, but the principle is true regardless of who said it. You know, at all times, preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words, something to that effect. Right? And so I love how you really see this coming alive with Ammon and how he chooses to interact and behave around the king, just to show him, like, look, there's a better way of life. You can be soft, you can be kind, you can be humble, and his motives are so pure. Imagine as a king, everybody's always wanting something from him.
Yeah.
Trying to create this relationship, because you're the king. If I can align myself with you, then I can better advance myself. And here comes this legitimate son of a king who is doing the opposite. Let me serve you. Let me get to know you. What can I do to help you? I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful story. It's a beautiful way of doing missionary work.
That's so profound and important. And it makes me think, I was just this morning listening to General Conference talk. Oh, I can't remember who it was by, but one of the things he said, he was talking about bishops and helping and teaching youth. And he said, the key is your relationship with them. That's the key. And I know that's the same thing with students and with your children, right? No one's going to listen if you don't have a relationship with them, but you have to have a relationship where they know and they trust you. So as you were saying that, and I mean, I kind of thought this through before, but this is the value of this. I'd never really thought it through before. As you were talking about Lamoni, I thought of a couple friends I had, and they haven't given me permission to share their story, so I won't use names, but people who were either pretty famous or pretty wealthy or both, and single guys, and the struggles they had because they'd say, you know, I just don't, when a girl wants to go out with me, I don't know why. It's so hard for me to ever get down to knowing exactly why they want to go out with me. And it did make it harder for them. And I would imagine for Lamoni, that's the case, right? Like everybody, as you said, everybody wants something from them. So how do you get to where you know who you can trust? And that's, you're not going to open your heart to people that you can't trust. And you're absolutely right. By just pure service, Ammon opens his heart. And I love what you're talking about, having to kind of keep track of, okay, he would soften my heart. My heart would be about this soft when he's done this, and then a little more soft when he's done this. And this kind of thing would open me up, and which I'm sure you had to express in your face and your body language and so on. But that's worth studying in this story, and trying to, everyone should try and piece it together the way Ben had to. And you may not come up with the same answers Ben did, and you may not have thousands of people watching your end results the way Ben did. But if you try and piece it together, you will have insights. I believe you'll have insights as to how you can help people you know have their hearts softened. What was it that Ammon did, and what are the different things that will make it so you can have that relationship and soften the hearts of those around you?
I love it. You know, what I think is, when I think about the character of Ammon, you don't only see his character with the king. You know, if you look at verse 29 of 17, you know, this is after the servants of King Lamoni begin to murmur because the flocks have been scattered.
Yeah.
And in verse 29, I love this. Now, when Ammon saw this, his heart was swollen within him with joy. When he sees that they're in pain, these guys are suffering, they're scared, they're worried. And Ammon's like, oh, this is a good opportunity where I could connect with these lowly servants. And he says, I'm going to show my power unto these, my fellow servants. And what I found interesting is from this point on, he calls them fellow servants. And then from the rest of this narrative, he refers to them as my brethren, which I think is really cool. You know, you see he's even trying to connect with these servants. And he says, maybe I can show forth my power, not to boast of himself. I will show forth my power unto these, my fellow servants, or the power which is in me. There's that humility.
Yeah.
Always deflecting. This isn't about me. This isn't about Ammon. It's the power that's in me in restoring these flocks unto the king, that I may, you know, show how amazing I am, that I may, you know, let them see that the power that I have. And he says, no, that I may win the hearts of these, my fellow servants, that I may lead them to believe in my words. His motives are so good. They're so pure. And he just, his nature is, I want to lift. I want to help. I want to share what I have. And I really think that Ammon has really gotten this. He's captured what President Nelson has encouraged us to do and think celestially.
Good.
He captured this so long ago, and he's like, I'm playing the long game. I really have to start. If I'm going to eventually get them to this point, I have to begin somewhere. And it really starts. He's being very, very patient, and he's starting to express that love. Really, he's living as Christ would. He is, in my opinion, he is a type of Christ, trying to show this is how Christ treated people. This is how he lived his life. And look at the effect that it can have on someone who is ready to accept and receive him.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you make me think that I should have, in what I was saying just a minute ago about softening people's hearts and so on, that I should have had in there the notion that it has to be done with a pure heart, right? It can't be done out of manipulation. It has to be done because you love them and you love God and you want to help them. And that's, I think that's what you're saying here about Ammon. And it wouldn't work if it were for an ulterior motive. If he wanted to become really powerful in the kingdom and he thought the way to get there was to first of all serve the king, it just wouldn't work the same way as what he wants is for them to believe his words and come to Christ, right? And so that you come to, like you read where call them his fellow servants, and then like the very next verse is where you say, when he saw the afflictions of those whom he termed to be his brethren, right? That phrase that you talked about, right? That's where he's at, and that's why he's able to do what he does.
Absolutely. You know, you can just see the love starting to grow. And I don't know what that's, you know, serving a missionary, you get your mission call and you realize, okay, I'm going to go to this foreign country. But it's not until you get there and you serve them where you really start to love the people you serve. And this doesn't just apply to missionary work. I mean, I see this with my primary kids. You know, I see these kids kind of running around the chapel and they're cute and they're funny. But then when you get them in your classroom every Sunday and you're around them and you recognize what you're trying to do. And what's interesting, what I've noticed is I've seen a carryover effect, not only with the kids that I'm teaching in my class, but their parents. Mm. Like I love their parents because I see how sweet and sometimes difficult their kids can be. And I feel for them. Their hearts are so tender and they're so pure. And I see the, you know, some of the struggles they have with their own kids, but the love that I have for their kids really has carried over to them. And I just love that principle of constantly trying to live our lives in a way that reflects the way that Christ treated people and acted them, the tenderness, the kindness that he always showed others around him.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think it comes a little bit from seeing people the way Christ would see them, which I think is what President Nelson is trying to get us to do when he says, see people as a child of God as their primary identity, right? And that's wonderful. I love it. Just such powerful stuff. And maybe I can just say that, I mean, we're talking about missionary work and it certainly applies, but as you were talking about the primary kids, it makes me think all of these principles apply equally to people that we already know that are members of the church, but we want to help them, right? And I'm thinking even of someone who has an older child that maybe isn't making the decisions they would like, or someone who has a grandchild who isn't making the decisions they would like, or someone who has someone in the ward that they know that isn't making the decisions they would like. And these principles work for them as well. And the place to start is with this love. And it's not until they feel the love and feel the relationship that the time will come when you should open your mouth. And there will come a time where maybe you have to speak boldly, and Ammon will. But he didn't start out that way, as you were saying. He didn't come in guns blazing. He waited until the relationship was there and the Spirit moved him. And it's very clear the Spirit is directing him when that happens. And that's true of missionary work, as you say, like for non-members. I think it's even more true for people we already know, that it's got to start with that love and service.
Absolutely. Are you okay if we compare Ammon to Aaron?
Yeah, let's do it. I think Aaron might be the older brother. Because I'm not 100% sure, but if I remember right, back in Mosiah 29, it was Aaron that they first offered the kingdom to.
Okay.
And so he may be the older brother. Not that matters in this story, but I find it interesting that the focus goes on Ammon. Even like in Mosiah 26, when someone needs to kind of reprove Ammon, and they didn't actually need to, but it seemed like it needed to, it's Aaron who does it, right? Yeah. I think you just see a couple little hints there. But the story focuses on Ammon, despite the fact that Aaron is the heir to the throne that has turned it down, and then I guess everyone else did as well. And it has to be because Ammon is the one who goes about this missionary work in this way and starts the success, right? And so that's where the focus is going to be. That's where the lessons are. So I think the contrast is going to be great.
Okay, so on that note, I this stood out to me as I was preparing these chapters. So if you go back to 17, because I was trying to figure this out too, Alma 17, verse 18. This is the beginning of this chapter, they're kind of giving a recap after they reunite.
You're right. Yeah.
And then in verse 18, it says, it's a subtle little correction. Now, Ammon being the chief among them, he minister unto them. So it kind of, it doesn't tell us, you know, who's older, but he's just like, he's the, maybe he's the religious leader. Maybe he's the kind of one they look to, that it just kind of has shown forth that, that maybe the spiritual maturity that perhaps his brothers, whether older or not, didn't have. And so it's kind of interesting to kind of see those little connections. I think it's clear that there is something about Ammon that is different than his brothers, that they look up to him, and then maybe they're kind of like, or even his approach. He's like this humble servant that's like, well, I'm gonna do what I know is right, regardless of what my brother's doing. This is how I'm gonna live my life.
That's fantastic. So yeah, let's piece this together just a little bit. So I just flip back to Mosiah 29. And verse one is when it says that he asked who they would have be their king. And the voice of the people in verse two came back saying, we are desirous that Aaron, thy son, should be our king. But Aaron had gone up to the land of Nephi, it tells us in the next verse. And he wouldn't take the kingdom of Canaan. Neither were any of the sons of Mosiah. So it doesn't state explicitly that he's the oldest, but you would assume that's who they're choosing, right? And so if he's the oldest, but Ammon is the chief or the ministering to them, then that does highlight an important thing, which is that the way governments work and the way God's government works is not the same. And we are not going to, I mean, in fact, if you were to look at all of Genesis and Exodus, the notion is that the cultural norm is the oldest child is the birthright son. And it doesn't happen one single time in all of Genesis and Exodus, right? God chooses who he's going to choose. Like he says about David, you know, when Samuel goes to anoint him, he says that you look on the outward, but God looks on the heart, right? So not to say that Aaron is a bad guy, but it is clear from the verse you read us, was it verse 8, that Ammon is their spiritual leader. What verse was that you had us read? I can't remember now.
17 verse, was it 17 verse
18. Yeah, not 8, 18. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so from that verse you chose, I mean, that's clear. So that's an interesting thing. It's fun to put these things together. Thank you.
Yeah, really, really fun. So if going to, and I love making this person between Ammon and Aaron. And this might kind of connect with what we've been talking about is Aaron's approach. You know, maybe he wasn't as, as in tune, as willing to be led. You know, you kind of see some connection between Ammon and Nephi. You know, maybe as older brothers, Nephi very willing to be led by the Spirit, and Aaron is like, we're just going to go in. So if you look in verse 21, verse 4
of chapter 17, still.
Chapter 21. The first thing in verse 4 that Aaron does, it looks, so they're in Jerusalem at this time, the city that Lamanites call Jerusalem.
Right.
And first began to preach to the Amalekites. He began to preach them in their synagogue. So all he just goes in and I'm preaching. Yep. I'm preaching to these people.
Which we've seen like Alma do a whole bunch of times, right? Yeah, that's what Alma does, and it doesn't work well in Ammonihah. But you're right.
You know, and what's interesting is these are all good things that they're doing, but timing, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
If you look in verse 5, he enters into their synagogues. Verse 9, he opens the scriptures unto them. Again, really good things. Opening of the scriptures, talking about Christ. Verse 11, he sees one of his brothers preaching. There he found Mulekai preaching the word unto them, and also Amah and his brethren, and they contended with many about the word. So you can see it's constantly preaching. And then verse 13, nevertheless, Aaron and a certain number of his brethren were taken and cast into prison. Like, we don't want to hear you. We don't want to listen to anything you have to say. We're just going to take you and throw you in prison. And it's an interesting contrast to see their approach to missionary work. You're taught, open the scriptures, teach them about Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Open your mouth and
that's right. Open your exactly. Yeah. And sometimes that's the approach. I love that Ammon, the approach that Ammon took was the softer approach. And to be honest, maybe when you really look at what this leads to, Ammon's brothers being thrown in prison leads to the conversion of the king over all the Lamanites.
Yeah. You know, so which kinda leads to larger mass conversion than happened with Lamoni. But yeah.
That's right. So you can kind of see how the Lord is just kind of sitting back and he's like, listen, let me do my thing. I know what's happening. You know, I'm about to make lemonade. You know, there's some lemons happening out, you know, going on right here. We're gonna make some lemonades out of these lemons that are taking place, you know, and being able to coordinate all these things. You know, Ammon, you take the soft approach, soften the king's heart. You know, and the only way you're going to soften his father's heart is if I get you on this road and you meet him here. You know, it's just interesting how things play out to lead to this amazing conversion of so many people.
You're so right. And, you know, this is, again, us playing, trying to get in people's heads in no way we can know the answers. It's still, I think, useful. You can receive inspiration and instruction as you try and do that. So, and I actually am thinking about Alma and Amulek as well. So Alma, he goes to Zarahemla and he preaches in the synagogue. He goes to Gideon, he preaches in the synagogue. He goes to Melech and he preaches in the synagogue. And it works in all these places. He goes to Ammonihah and he preaches in the synagogue and he gets cast out. So he comes back a different way and a different thing, and Amulek helps him and so on. But in the end, he goes and he preaches out on the street or wherever it is. It doesn't tell us where he is, but it's a big public preaching, right? And it gets them cast into prison, and all sorts of tough things happen as a result. The last week's episode was with Kylie Turley, as we tried to address the suffering that those people went through. That are burned and so on, and how could that happen? And actually, just a fantastic episode. So if anyone in this audience hasn't heard that one, I would encourage you. It touched me. Kylie's approach deeply touched me. And it turns out some tragedies happened to people she knew right after that. I think that we were inspired to have talked about it that way for them, if no one else. So it was a really touching one. But it's made me think about how sometimes the Lord either lets people act he could have stopped Alma and Amulek from preaching to people because it's going to lead to people burning. And in fact, this is going to lead to people being killed by the sword, by their brethren, 1,000 of them all in one day. So tough things are going to happen because of the truth, but that's not, I think God does care about our lives and about us dying and so on, but he cares more about our spiritual lives than us dying spiritually. But he sometimes lets people do things and sometimes directs people to do things, even when sometimes that direction isn't going to work out immediately just perfectly. So I have asked myself 1,000 times, and I don't know the answer. Did he inspire Aaron to go guns a-blazing so that Aaron would get thrown in prison, so that eventually that would work out so that he can convert the great king? Although actually it seems like maybe he could have done that without being in prison. I don't know, except for that it's Ammon going to get him out of prison that gets him to meet the king. So I don't, you know, it's hard to know how all these dominoes would play. Or is it just that he's like, yeah, I'm just not going to give you direction and you go on your own and this will eventuate in things lining up the right way? Or did he give him direction, but Aaron didn't quite hear it, but God still turned it to work for his good? And any of those are possible. And in the end, that's the comforting thing. Whichever way we're doing it right and whichever way we're doing it wrong, if we are trying, God's still going to make it work out the way it should. And sometimes we will have been in prison and in bands beforehand, and sometimes we won't. But either way, God's going to get us where we need to be if we're just trying to do his will, even when we're messing up while we're trying.
You're absolutely right. You know, and there's a lot of really cool details in this story. You know, when I was a kid, I focused on, you know, Ammon, you know, and the disarming, you know,
literally.
That's right. Exactly. You know, Lamoni's conversion and everything that takes place there. You know, I would always laugh at, his wife saying, you know, to me, he stinketh not, you know.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines in the Book of Mormon.
So many really cool details. But the real highlight of the story is the atonement. And it's God's goodness, you know, like how you can, if I'm not careful in my scripture study, I could focus on those details. And Elder Scott, you know, used to talk about that, how to try not to let the details get in the way of really pulling out the true principle of this story, which is God is good. The atonement is real. Regardless of what you have done in your past, you can overcome through the atonement of Jesus Christ. And you have one story here about King Lamoni, but this is a story that's continuing to today of restoring, you know, the Lamanites and bringing mm-hmm. them back, just as Enos prayed for. You know, someday let them hear this. Let them come back. Let them be forgiven and receive all the blessings that come from the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's why I just love the beauty of this story, because it highlights how good God is and how powerful the atonement is in our lives.
Oh, amen to that. Amen. In fact, as you're saying that, and I don't want to take too long with this, so I'll try and be fast, but let me just kind of propose some scenarios that I think highlight that. So this story doesn't happen the way that it happens, or these things don't come out with this amazing result with thousands coming unto Christ and being saved, and that affecting people for generations, honestly, with the stripling warriors and everything else. But if you don't have, you know, Ammon and Aaron and Onner and Himni and their friends deciding to go, Ammon leaves and he goes to this place, he is inspired to work with these servants where you've got this problem, and the problem happens and he's inspired how to work it. There's a woman there who's been converted because God put in place a vision to her father or of her father years before that. And the wife loves Lamoni and is willing to do things right. And meanwhile, Aaron is over here in jail in this way, and they go on a journey, and it's at the same time. So they meet the king, right? All of these things in place, but let's take it one step further. All of that means nothing if God hasn't also put into place the fact that a few years from now, his son is going to come and suffer and die for us. The amount of things God does to make it so that we can come be with him and be like him, and the crowning jewel of which, and the by far the most important of which, is that his son comes and suffers for us. But you're right, the amount of things God does that where we can see his goodness and his love being shed abroad in the hearts of the children of men, it's overwhelmingly incredible how much God loves us and how good he is when you look at all these things. Thanks for pointing that out, Ben.
Absolutely. So, you know, something that I being on set, you really understand the impact this story has on so many different people. You know, we there were a lot of people that were a part of telling this story, and we counted up, and I think there were 29 different tribes represented, different Lamanite peoples that were being represented. You know, wow. It was incredible. And I remember going on set the first day, and this was my first like really big role on a big production like this, you know, where, you know, I have my own trailer with my name on it, you know, so everywhere you go, somebody meets you and is like, all right, we got to take you here. And we're gonna, and you know, you don't wait in line to eat. You don't wait in line to, you know, to get your hair and your makeup done. You're first every time. And so the being this my first experience, you know, you start to think that you're kind of a big deal, right? It's like, wow, this is look how special I am. Look what I'm doing. And everywhere I went, people were looking and staring, you know, all the other actors and background, because when you're telling the King Lamoni story and you're King Lamoni, you're kind of the man of the hour. And I had to really check myself, but I learned a very valuable lesson very early on in that process. People wanted to take pictures. And I remember this, the sweetest older lady, she comes up and she didn't speak English. And so her daughter was there speaking for her and said, my mom wants to get her picture taken with you. And so here I am like thinking, oh, you know, I'm getting a taste of what it means to be an actor. So we take the picture and the mom has tears streaming down her face. And it was a very humbling experience for me. The daughter says, her mom threw tears and she said, thank you for telling the story of our people. We love King Lamoni. Hmm. And it hit me, Carrie, so hard. It was like, this isn't about me.
Yeah.
This is about him. You know, whenever I do anything, and I mean, I bet you Ammon feels the same way. This isn't about me. This is about Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, to view myself as an instrument in his hands to portray this character, it wasn't about me. It's about this humble servant who had the courage to risk his life to accept Jesus Christ, that has led to just this amazing story that the remnants of those people, they hunger for this story to be told. And it really was sweet to see how precious this is to them, that he's their hero. King Lamoni is their hero because he chose Christ, which then gave them the opportunity to choose Christ.
Oh, that is so powerful. And, you know, there's a part of me that knew that had to be how it was for some people, but it's powerful to hear how moving it really is. That's wonderful. And I couldn't agree more with your focus. Thank you.
I wanted to highlight how good God is in this story and just kind of seeing how he works. And, I have a huge testimony of the atonement. You know, this is kind of going into next week's story, but, you know, we have this idea of the bearing of the weapons of war that's coming up.
Yeah.
The next week, you know, with the Anti-Nephi Lehi's. And it was just powerful to be a part of that filming as well and to actually throw our weapons in, giving up all of our sins. You know, there's something in section 18, you know, I as just a touch on this experience with Ammon and Lamoni, where Ammon is teaching him. And you have this moment of they're in this room, and he's there for what does it say? He's there for the space of an hour in verse 14. The king answered him not for the space of an hour.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of see like King Lamoni is so curious about this person in front of him. And if you go down to verse 16.
Okay, so we're in 17, 16.
Chapter 18, verse 16.
Oh, yeah, sorry, 18, 16. Okay.
So Ammon's trying to get something out of King Lamoni. And he's just, you know, he's in shock. He's just in awe. He's inspired.
Act it out. Let's be quiet for an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Never mind. That's bad podcasting. Okay.
And verse 16, and it came to pass that Ammon, being filled with the Spirit of God, therefore he perceived the thoughts of the king. And so just Ammon to be so in tune to know, okay, what do I do? How do I handle this? This is an awkward situation.
Yeah.
You know, how am I going to get him to speak and to say something? And if you go down to verse 18, you know, Ammon still, in verse 17, Ammon's like, look, I'm just a man. I'm just a servant. You don't have to be afraid of me. And then verse 18, you get the same idea. Now, when the king had heard these words, he marveled again, for behold, he beheld that Ammon could discern his thoughts. Ammon knows what he's thinking. And he asked him in verse 20, how do you know the thoughts of my heart? You know, whenever I look at missionary work and bringing people to Christ and just how important it is to have the Spirit, you know, when my son, who just returned from his mission, he was really challenging. He was really difficult. It was really hard to, as a teenager, and he knows I hope he watches this because he knows that this is, I tell his story. He is our Alma the younger, he had some challenges, and getting him on his mission was really, really tough. And I remember my wife, when he was preparing, the fact that he let us push him to take the next step to getting his mission call. My wife kept praying, I don't care where he goes on his mission, I want him to find the right mission president. And boy, were our prayers answered. You know, you talk about Ammon and the being wise, yet harmless, as it says he was in verse 22. And how do I talk to this soul who needs something? So the first few months of my son's mission, he just was kind of there just to be there. And he describes how whenever he would with his mission president, he felt like there was a barrier. And he was really close, wouldn't open up. And as a result, the mission president saw that there was a lack of growth on the part of my son. So one of the interviews, they're sitting there, and he later told me the story. He just couldn't figure out, how do I crack this missionary so I can get him to open up and share with me so that I can begin to build him up? And it was so interesting because during this interview, he asked him a question. My son later told me, he said, Dad, he said, that's the only question he could have asked me that would have gotten me to open up. And that very in tune, that very wise yet harmless mission president knew the one question that he could ask my son that would bring down all the walls, that allowed my son to grow far beyond we could have possibly imagined as a missionary and as a person. And it's because that the Spirit was able to be invited into that conversation, just knowing what to ask, being in tune. I love that little nugget, a little part of that story that has a sweet, sweet personal connection between me and my son. And I'm so grateful for wise, humble servants that are willing to listen and act when the Spirit prompts to.
Amen to that. And let me say, thank God for that mission president and for caring so much that he would inspire that mission president and soften the heart of your son, and for all of the other times he's done that in so many other places, in millions and millions of times. That what a great example of the goodness of God and his love for us, and how involved he is in the lives and details of every individual. It's well illustrated in the story we just read and in the story you just told. Thank you, Ben.
Absolutely, you bet. Hey, and this Sunday, I get to welcome that mission prayer. I get to give him my own personal hug and thank him as he returns home this Sunday. He'll be home. And so I cannot wait to thank him in person.
That is fantastic. That's so, so cool. And very tangentially, but that just reminded me that, so this episode will come out this Sunday, the same Sunday you're doing that. And I think you and I are on the same, on a follow-up episode this Sunday as well. So
awesome.
It's a fortuitous Sunday, but none of it is as important as you're going to hug that mission president. But when you said this Sunday, it made me think of lots of stuff. Anyway, well, thank you, Ben. Can you just tell us, how you feel about the power of the Book of Mormon after having had to delve into at least a specific set of chapters so deeply?
Wow.
Is that too deep? It's too big a question?
No. It's a beautiful question because I have such a deep love for the Book of Mormon. It's changing my life. It has changed my life. It is changing my life to be able to go into, you know, that situation. And not only, it's not isolated to being a part of such an amazing project. That was a sweet experience to be able to really study, to dive, to genuinely find a connection with one of the characters that I feel goes beyond this life. I feel a deep connection to him. I feel a deep connection to his descendants. The Book of Mormon, it's changing my life every day. I love it. I cannot express enough how much how deeply I know that that book came from God. I'm on this streak right now, Kerry, this year, of reading it every single day. And I haven't missed a day the entire year.
Good for you.
It's interesting because I started out where I wanted to read it so I could check the box every day that I read it. Mm-hmm. And it quickly has transformed into I hunger after it. I need, my day is not complete. I don't have to try to read it. I look for every opportunity I get to just jump back into that book because I love it so much. And it is a true gift that I've been given. I'm just so grateful for it. I have a deep, deep love for it. And I'm so grateful that you gave me this opportunity to come here and to talk about it. And thank you for allowing me to share my testimony of it.
Well, thank you. You've just described a good example of hungering and thirsting after righteousness. But I also think that the power, to go back to your earlier emphasis, and I don't want to take us away from that as we end here, but the power that is in the Book of Mormon is one of the most beautiful testimonies of the love God has for us and the goodness of God, that he's given us something that can help us so much. So thank you, Ben, and thank you, Lamoni and Mormon and Joseph Smith and everyone else that gave us all this wonderful stuff, and especially thank you, God. And we want to thank our audience, and we hope that you've heard something here that uplifted and edified you, and that you'll go share it with someone else. We hope you'll share it online in all those ways that I'm supposed to tell you, share it online, because we do want to grow the podcast and we do want to help more people here. But mostly, I hope you'll find an individual that you feel inspired to share something that you learned, felt, were touched by, or anything else. And just go find one person that you can serve and love and uplift. And I think that if that happens, that we'll feel like our time was well spent. So I also want to encourage you to come back next week. We have Lori Denning. She's been on before. She's going to talk about really mostly just Alma 24 and the bearing of the weapons of war on King Anti-Nephi Lehi, who I think also has to be a hero to a lot of people. He's a hero to me. And anyway, it's going to be a great episode then. But and this week we also have John Hilton as well. So all sorts of great stuff to listen to. I've just feel so edified by this discussion. Thank you for sharing it with us, Ben.